I'd like to tell you a story of one of the saints of the church who was nearly forgotten, and her name is Egeria. And while we don't know her full background, Egeria was likely a nun living in Spain or Gaul around the late 300s. And what makes her exceptional in Christian history is a diary she kept of her travels to Jerusalem on pilgrimage around the year 380. Christianity is in a distinct new shape in this time period, a shape it hasn't had for very long. It's only in 313 that Christianity was decriminalized in the Roman Empire. The first form of the Nicene Creed was hammered out in 325. The Emperor Constantine converted to Christianity in 337, marking a major shift in Christianity's relationship with worldly power. And it's only in 381, the exact time of Egeria's journal, that the form of the Nicene Creed we use today is thought to have been fully accepted at the Council of Constantinople. Egeria is only a couple hundred years removed from the time of Christ. She's roughly 70 years removed from her faith being illegal. And she's a contemporary of one of the primal statements of faith that we still use to this day to define what we believe as Christians. So her journal is a hugely important document, as it gives firsthand experience of Christian life and practice. Her diary is written in letter form. She's writing back to a group of women in her homeland to describe what she's seeing on her pilgrimage, for presumably her friends were not able to make the arduous journey with her. So it's this lovely play-by-play that describes everything around her. What makes this invaluable in comparison to other documents of its time is that this is not some stodgy theologian, some bishop or scholar writing a complicated treatise. This is the common folk of faith. This is you and me. She writes in a way that shows she deeply loves the people she writes to, and she wants to share her experience with them. And so when reading it, it feels like she's writing to you. And she writes in a way that captures the solemnity of the rites she is witnessing, leaving behind one of the only such descriptions of early church practices. And what makes her a nearly forgotten saint is that her diary was only rediscovered in 1884 in an 11th century manuscript. Of note for today are her descriptions of the Holy Week services. Her travels take her to Jerusalem during Holy Week, and some might argue that that is the point of her travels entirely, to be there for the holiest time in the life of the church, to be there in the place where it all happened. And should you go and read her entries, you'll find that they sound a whole lot like the traditions we still do today. Starting with the procession from the Mount of Olives, remembering Jesus' triumphant entry on what we now call Palm Sunday. She writes, "The bishop rises, and all the people with him, and they all go on foot from the top of the Mount of Olives, all the people going before him with hymns and antiphons, answering one to another, 'Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord.' And all the children in the neighborhood, even those who are too young to walk, are carried by their parents on their shoulders, all of them bearing branches, some of palms and some of olives." She paints a picture that could have been ripped right out of Matthew's gospel itself, although with some impactful differences. The Mount of Olives was well known for its importance in messianic predictions. It's the gate that the Messiah was to enter Jerusalem through. Largely, Jesus had stayed away from Jerusalem, away from the seat of power. Jesus' ministry was really formed out in the country, out among the villages, out with the people. His turn toward Jerusalem, his turn toward the power of the day, marks a major shift in his life and ministry. For him to arrive at the Mount of Olives with the sort of reputation he has as a prophet, with the following he has garnered, it is to say only one thing. The Messiah is here. And the people know it. They fall over themselves, rejoicing that the one who comes in the name of the Lord has arrived. The people on that road that day expect this triumphant procession to end with Jesus on the throne. Jesus, riding a donkey rather than a war horse, seemingly has different plans. It is the first sign that this moment, this week, this messiahship is different than what people expect. As I said, Egeria's description of the Palm Sunday liturgy has some impactful differences from Jesus' original journey. She writes that the procession slowly makes its way through the city, chanting and singing, eventually winding its way to the Anastasis, which is the place of the resurrection, at which point those gathered say the evening prayers and then depart for the next day. It is a joyful procession to a joyful place. It's not the throne, but it's the place of the resurrection, the place where Jesus conquers death and ushers in a new era of grace and love. But I think we might do well to remember what the place of the resurrection is by another name: the tomb. If you had been at the place of the resurrection on the day where Jesus' body is laid to rest, it would not have been a place filled with happiness and glee. I tell all this to tell a bit of the story of why Palm Sunday is so jarring. Congregants, priests, and liturgists have long asked about the necessity of reading the Passion narrative on Palm Sunday, which we will do in just a few minutes. And it seems that we're getting ahead of ourselves in many ways. Why do we have to celebrate the Messiah's arrival and then kill him off immediately? There have been many answers posited to that question over the years. Some say, well, it's a modern addition because no one comes to church on Good Friday anymore. So we have to make sure everyone hears the Passion. That's a cynic's answer, and it's largely untrue. Some say it's a liturgical juxtaposition of our tendency to celebrate Jesus with our words, while at the same time continuing on with the actions that bear no witness to his teachings and love. We welcome him in, all while continuing to participate in his death. There is much more credence to that thought than the former. But what's so interesting about Egeria's diary is that her first-hand account of Holy Week gives us a historical marker to say that the jarring nature of this day has been noted and celebrated for nearly the entirety of Christian history. As Egeria describes the triumphal entry and the march towards Anastasis, she describes the exact experience of this liturgy. It is both the entry and the tomb. It is the welcome and the death. Like Egeria, and like so many before us, we have now started the journey with Jesus from the Mount of Olives. And it's a journey that will lead to his death on the cross. As we begin this solemn week of remembrance and contemplation on Jesus' passion and death, I want to be clear that what we are doing in the 16 services between now and Easter is distinct from reenactment. What Egeria's journal shows is that there is a deep Christian history in the liturgical traditions we embark on today. 2,000 years of history, 2,000 years of Christians marking these days in communal prayer. Liturgies are never reenactments, because liturgies are living. They are meant to change us. They are meant to transform how we see ourselves and see the world. In whatever way you can this week, join us for the story of Holy Week. Many of the liturgies may seem strange, long, some even quite somber, and yet I find them to be some of the most important things we do in worship. Clearly, Egeria did too, traveling some 2,000 miles to participate. Her diary, though written to her friends and family back home, in a strange way, is written directly to us as a loving invitation into this sacred time. She wanted her friends to experience this week, and so she takes loving care to describe all that she sees and hears, so they too can participate in these acts of liturgical remembrance, so that they too can benefit from their transformational power. That is the invitation she gives to you as well, some 1,700 years later. Come and see why this week is different from what you expect. Come and see why the power of this Messiah is different from what the world expects.